Hi, I'm Shadow Stevens. While I'm doing this and that and the other thing at the very same time, I'm having a great time on The Jeremiah Show, the greatest show in the history of the world. For the love of God, subscribe. No, seriously, subscribe.
It's The Jeremiah Show. Tearing back the curtain on music icons, pop culture, and food gods, we're bringing you the hottest guests from around the globe with your host, Kat, and your music business authority, LA personal development commentator, Mike Gormley. The Jeremiah Show is sound designed by master sound engineer, Dr. D. He's a restaurant and bar fixer. He's opened and fixed over 200 restaurants, bars, and hotels. He's a partner with legendary drummer Mick Fleetwood from Fleetwood Mac in Fleetwood's on Front Street in Maui. And he's your radio host. Step aside, Superman, from A Race Around the Sun, Jeremiah and Kat.
Hello, everybody. This is Mike Gormley, and I'm sitting in for Jeremiah. It's called The Jeremiah Show, so we have to mention him at some point. We're here with Kat, we're here with engineer Richard, we're here, Jeremiah's off in the corner, and Dan Navarro is God knows where, but he's our guest today. Where are you today, Dan?
I'm in Dallas, Texas.
Wow. Hey, I'm in Austin.
Oh my God, I'm going to be in Austin on Saturday. I've got Dallas today, Houston tomorrow. Saturday in Austin, Sunday in Page, Texas, and then I'm going to go back to Austin and maybe go hang out with Chris Gage at Don's Depot and then head up to Chicago.
I should pop over there and see you. Let's meet in person. All right. Done. We'll talk after the show.
What's the show on Saturday in Austin? Where is that?
That is something Will Taylor and his significant other, Karen Mall, are doing called Strings in the Woods, although they're thinking of moving it indoors because my understanding is it's pretty wet down in Austin at the moment.
Yes.
And so... See, I actually subscribe to worldwide weather reports. I know where the weather, what the weather, actually my favorite weather app is called WT Forecast, which is a rude weather app. And it says really rude stuff to you about the weather. But apropos of nothing, Mike knows, tangents are my métier.
Love it. Yeah. See, you're getting the point that Dan's a little weird.
A little.
He's the right kind of weird. I love it.
Yeah, the right, yeah, well put, the right kind of weird.
Well, that's a song title.
Oh, you're right. I want to tell folks a little bit about Dan. He's one of the finest songwriters around. You would know him from songs he's written for Pat Benatar, this little thing called We Belong. He co-wrote with his partner, Eric Lowen, who we'll talk about later. And has also written for the Bangles and Jackson Browne and Keb Moe and various people like that. There's a lot more to Dan that we'll also get into because there's an acting side, or at least a voiceover side, and then there's even a sort of political side, an advocacy side that we'll talk about. So Dan, from Dallas, Texas, you know, the fact you're in Dallas, Texas is interesting because you hadn't really gone anywhere, of course, for the pandemic for a year or more than a year.
14 months.
Yeah. But you were on the bloody Facebook every night practically for that whole time.
I did 6 days a week on Facebook from March 15th to August 15th. I backed it off to 3 days a week and then started changing platforms. So I would do Monday on Facebook, Wednesday on YouTube, and Saturdays on Twitch, which is the new format out there for some people. It's a gamer site that a lot of musicians are using. And developed a rapport with a whole bunch of people that were also shut in. And we developed a little, I mean, they call it the Dan fam, and they, you know, have become close with each other. It was a remarkable lesson in engagement and how sometimes when the world is zigging, if you zag, you might do better. So it was a real heady lesson that I've taken to heart. So I started thinking in June, I don't want to be here anymore. I don't want to get out of airports and airplanes. So I started thinking about getting a van, and lo and behold, in February, one showed up completely tricked out, completely converted at an incredibly reasonable price, built by a 30-year friend, and I bought it. And I left LA on April 21st, and I've been out for 43 days, and I'm not coming home for another 4 weeks. And Let's go. Bring it on. You know, it's a get your motor running. Da, 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 head on a highway in a camper van. It's pretty cool.
It's also, I got a feeling when you're home in 4 weeks, you're home for about 4 minutes. I haven't looked at your itinerary, but I don't think you're going to stick around long.
Well, Mike knows me very, very well for a very long time, and normally I would be home for a short time. I'm actually going to be home for 2 solid months, which means I'm going to do something unusual. In mid-July, I'm starting the next record, and I'm going to work with my old producer from the old days, Jim Scott, and go to his wonderful studio and pound out the next record. I've got about 20 songs to choose from, and he says, let's do 10, which means I'm going to have 10 orphans. Which means it's going to mean I'm going to have something else to do with someone else. And very excited about doing the project the way Jim likes to do it, which is everything sounds brilliant and he tends to work quickly. I made the last record slowly on purpose because I wasn't 100% sure of what I wanted to say. I worked with a magnificent producer player named Steve Postel, who's part of the immediate family with Danny Kortchmar and Leland Sklar and Russ Kunkel and Waddy Wachtel. A few lightweights out there.
Yeah, some little guys.
Some little guys. And so I knew that he wasn't necessarily going to have the time. And I wanted to do it with Jim again. I made my first 4 albums with Jim and the final Lone and Navarro record with Jim. So I basically decided that I wanted to do it again with him. And we're raring to go.
Well, that one is fantastic. In that little talk you just gave, you mentioned Lone and Navarro.
Yes, indeed.
Lone and Navarro. Basically the start of it all for you. I mean, it was Eric Lowen, Dan Navarro. It's an interesting story how you got together. But as songwriters, you connected so beautifully. As singers, just think of, combine the Everly Brothers with Simon and Garfunkel and throw in the Beatles just for extra. That's how good these guys sounded together. It was quite amazing.
And it was a magical combination, him and me. And well, as you know, but the general public doesn't. He got sick in 2004 with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. We thought he'd last a year. He lasted 8 years, and we spent nearly 5 of them on the road together. Learned a lot. Learned about not postponing things and about appreciating who you are and what you've got and who you're with. And we saw it completely out, and then I went solo and decided at an advanced stage in my career to go and do this some more. I've had the time of my life, and I have to tell you, I think one of the lessons of life, I'm having the time of my life right now. And if tomorrow is better than yesterday, then you're on the right track, and it doesn't matter what you're doing.
It's working.
It's working, and I'm having a blast. That's really, you know, you get to a stage in your life where you feel like, you know, there are stages where you feel like, I have to do this, I don't really want to. Or, I have to do this, I like what I'm doing, but I don't like the people I'm doing it with. Those days are over for me. I don't work with people I don't like. I don't do anything I don't want to do. I'm incredibly fortunate that way. I do more than I have to. The simple arithmetic, on Monday, I flew from Kansas City to Los Angeles for 22 hours to do some voice work in 4 episodes of a TV series. And okay, let's bring it on. I got back in the airplane, went back, picked up the rest of my tour and drove 9 hours from Kansas City to Dallas last night. Bring it on.
That's your life now.
That's my life now. And I love it.
And that's fantastic. Look, have you ever tried to describe that magic you referred to between you and Eric? There was a friendship. There was even a separation for a while. There's a little upset for a while, but the songwriting and the singing meshed so beautifully. Was that a surprise? Did it come out of nowhere?
Came out of nowhere. We were both working at a restaurant that had singing waiters, and we didn't like each other. He was taller, better looking, had a better guitar, had a higher voice. I was very threatened by him. His version of that was, I was an experienced songwriter and he wasn't. We were both a little full of ourselves, and we didn't really care for each other. I possessed a little more hubris than he liked, and he had a kind of a calm swagger that I didn't really like. Then one night we sang together, we hit the same vocal part, singing harmonies with somebody, both moved to the adjoining note, realizing, well, he's on my spot, I got to move to this spot. And we did that thing you do in a doorway when you're going side to side and both people go the same direction at the same time. And finally somebody says, stop. Well, I made a symbol with my hand. Those of you who are able to see this, I took a sideways V and I flipped my fingers to simply say, you stay high, I'll stay low. Wordlessly. He stayed high, I stayed low. We locked and went, oh, Nelly. This doesn't happen every day. We could read each other's minds as singers. The voices were different. We didn't have sibling harmonies. We didn't have identical vocals. We had different timbres that blended together really, really well, and we knew how to blend them instinctively. Nothing I've ever done in my life was easier, quicker, or more fulfilling than the sound of singing with him. So we worked out the friendship. And because we weren't natural friends, we treated each other with enormous courtesy. Except when we didn't, which was occasionally, somebody would always say something stupid and I would always say, I'm sorry, Eric. It's kind of how it went. I was a lot quicker to anger. He was the slower burn. We were real counterparts, as different as Hall & Oates or, you know, Mick and Keith or Paul and John. And it was a wonderful partnership. And we did have some tough spots, but we kind of knew that breaking up was going to be a real mistake. And we thought we would be able to be together forever. And then he got sick. So we played it out. But yeah, that feeling, that blend, that mesh, nothing I've ever done in my life was like that. And
you're
so consequently,
vocally. Now, songwriting, there was a mesh also, right?
Well, I was the more experienced songwriter. So I sort of helped train him into what was worth writing about. He then took that and ran all the way to the bank with it by becoming a magnificent songwriter on his own. His version of it was he taught me how to be a guitar player and fit in and not just blah all over the place. We learned from each other and we blended and we knew we didn't always love the fact that we knew that we were stuck with each other, but we knew that we would not be any good on our own until we had to be. And I think that was probably the greatest and hardest lesson of my life is when he got sick and stopped working it out on my own. And that took a couple of years of me making mistakes and being awkward on stage and, you know, scared of my own shadow. And then it started changing. I've been really fortunate the last few years, but I learned so much from working with him about how it goes that I never would have done anything worthwhile had it not been for him.
Didn't We Belong, a classic song, one of the biggest songs maybe of all time, and it just keeps going. Pat Benatar sang it and had the top five around the world. That song came out of a separation, didn't it?
We had not been he had asked me, he had been appointed, we were in a band together, Side Guys, and I was devoting more time to my day job in advertising, which was a company that was owned by my uncle, and my uncle and his son, Dave Navarro, the rock star, had gone through an unspeakable personal tragedy with the death of Dave's mom, Eric, Mike's ex-wife, in a unspeakable domestic violence incident with her boyfriend. And so I had to commit to the agency and do my job. And the band was saying, you're flagging in your commitment to us. We need a commitment. I said, I have no choice. And so I left the band. I was over 30 and thought, that's it. You're done. It didn't happen. It never happened. And I'd had a couple songs on records, but that really didn't matter. And he made me make the choice. So of course I shot the messenger and decided that I wasn't going to speak to him anymore. I shan't speak to you. And he called up one day out of the blue, 2 months after we had been speaking several times daily for years. So 2 months of not speaking is a long time. And he called up one day and said, hey, want to write a song? And I'm sitting there going, you this and you're not awesome. And I can't. And I didn't say any of it. I sucked it up and said, sure. And I thought, you're being a chump. You're letting him take advantage of you by saying yes. But I wasn't doing anything musically and I was dying inside. So yeah, I went over there and on the appointed evening in 90 minutes, we wrote We Belong and just went, what on earth did we just do?
Yeah. And it got recorded pretty quickly, didn't it?
It was released 13 months after we wrote it. It was recorded within 6 months after we wrote it. We knew Benatar was going to do it. We're sitting there going, what just happened? What just happened? And you know, he was painting houses. I was working in advertising. And it was scary, but it came out. Everything happened. We're sitting there basically soiling ourselves with what was going on. And it changed everything for us. And when it came out, we were 32 and 33 years old. and thinking, well, God, this is, where did this come from? Top five all over the world, multi-million seller, you know, TV shows, the whole nine yards. Then we decide, let's really, and then we started, you know, writing for other people and fell into the songwriter community and got hooked up with the Bangles, which is actually where we had met Mike beforehand when he was managing the Bangles. This was a period after that, and got a couple songs on their records, but we decide we want to be artists. Yeah, there's, wait. You're having a successful career as songwriters, and you want to chuck that all to go be artists in a van around the country? Yeah, let's do that. And made, and wound up playing a little bar in Mar Vista, California, near Venice. Played a weekly, you know, played a residency once a week for 2 years. And somebody who had no idea how uncool we were came in and said, I want to make a record with you. And it went from there. And we were 37 and 38 years old, making our first album.
That's amazing. And
touring at 38 and 39 in 1990.
That's tough for people who are 19 and 18.
It was really weird. We got, you know, I mean, the story reads like one of those things where no one would believe. I mean, the head of promotion for the label said, yeah, boy, shame I can't get this on the radio. And the person just below him said, no effing way. And got us on some of the most important stations nationwide, WXRT in Chicago, Cities 97 in Minneapolis, WHFS in DC. And yes, I remember all of this. And I'm still in contact with people from those days, from the stations. We went out there and worked harder than anybody. We got really lucky. We just kept going. And at the end of the most amazing year, our record company closed its doors. So here we were on the streets again. It happened more than once. A friend of ours who had placed our songs with his artist, Tom Vickers, who was working at Mercury Records, said one day, I can't sign you, you're too old. And then about 4 months later said, I've got this crazy idea. I think I want to sign you to an extremely low budget deal. And we went, great, let's do it. And got our major label deal at 40 and 41.
Well done. Well done. Doesn't
it just, now. You know, we remained upright and animate. I equate it to the roly-poly punching clowns that are inflatable and they're weighted at the bottom and you punch them and they never go down. That's who we were.
Well, that's a really good way to be if you're going to be a singer-songwriter. You got, that's an attribute that some people don't realize is necessary.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, we will. We're gonna wind down and into Kat, who's gonna tell us what's happening.
Yeah, well, we have a special treat for this show because Dan Navarro handpicked all of the songs that you're gonna hear throughout the broadcast. And we're gonna go out to Constant as the Night. Dan, can you tell us why you chose that song?
It's been one of the most enduring songs. We wrote it with Jerry Giddens in 1992 and put it on an album in 1993. It did really, really well in a bunch of markets, including Chicago and Minneapolis. Still one of the most requested songs I play at my shows. And it's basically, we got the idea from, I am as constant as the Northern Star, constantly in the dark, where's that at? If you want me, I'll be in the bar by Joni Mitchell. So we wrote this song about, I am as constant as the night. Constant as the night changes into daylight. It comes, it goes, it comes, it goes, it comes, it goes, but it's still constant.
I love that. Case of You is one of my favorite songs. So Constant as the Night, here you are. We will be right back with Dan Navarro. You're listening to The Jeremiah Show. Hey, everyone. If you like the music from today's show, here is where you can get some more. Follow Dan Navarro at dannavarromusic.com. Follow Dan Navarro on Facebook at Dan Navarro Music. On Instagram at Dan Navarro, and go to his website, dannavarro.com.
Hi there, everybody. This is Ann Hage, and you're listening to The Jeremiah Show. We are Ann
and Heather,
and we are better together.
Now, everyone told me, everybody said, but I refused to listen, and I left with you instead. And I will never fail you, no, I won't fall behind. I may be crazy as the cracks in this old guitar, but I'm as constant as the night. Constant as the night. Change.
My name's Danny Trejo, and you're listening to The Jeremiah Show. And on it, I'm talking about my cookbook, Awesome. Hey, I got a documentary coming out, a record called Satisfy My Soul. Check it out. Trejo's music, Jeremiah. You're loved, Holmes.
The Jeremiah Show, your show to hear the best new music and exclusive artist interviews. You won't hear personal interviews like these anywhere else.
Hi, this is Johnny Valenti. I'm the owner of Birdland Jazz Club in New York City. For nearly four decades, going dark during the global pandemic taught me how important the arts, especially music, are to each of our cultures and our health. Musicians literally bring life and joy to our daily lives. Radio shows that support musicians and music, like The Jeremiah Show, are so important in keeping music alive. I hope that you will keep listening and supporting musicians. Please support the music. And please come and visit me at Birdland when you're in New York City. Thank you.
I had a dream, I flew like a bird to the top of the mountain, and there you were, bathed in the shadows, alone in the dark, with a lock and chain around your bulletproof heart. Minute by minute, time after time, body to body, crossing over the line, wrapped in each other, a shower of sparks began to melt the ice away from your bulletproof heart. Somebody tell me, please, are we really here? I open my eyes and you disappear, and all the king's horses and all the king's men can't put the genie back in the bottle again. Now I try to.
Welcome back to the Jeremiah Show. You just heard Bulletproof Heart, again handpicked by Dan Navarro. All show. Dan, tell us about that song.
Bulletproof Heart came out of a real event. Playing a show in Chicago, and a dear old friend, a lovely, lovely woman who had been a swimsuit model in the 90s, this happened about 2011, and one of the most beautiful women I'd ever known, who I had secretly had a major crush on for a decade and a half. And I walked her to her car. She said, I'm driving the car my father left me after he passed away. He bought it from a drug dealer. And I went, well, how do you know that? She says, well, it's got a little Miami plate on the trunk lid, and the windows are bulletproof. I went, get out of town. She rolled the windows down. They were half an inch thick. She then gave me a ride back to the club as I bid her goodbye, and I went to give her a little tiny peck goodnight, and it turned into 20 minutes. And I went, whoa, I got to write about what happened between you and me and your bulletproof car. Wait a minute. And the light bulb went on to shift that into Bulletproof Heart, which frankly did describe how she was a very beautiful woman who had a very hard time both giving and accepting love. And it turned into the song. And it's the centerpiece of my solo record. And probably one of the best things I've ever written, because every word of it was heartfelt. None of it was, but it came out of, you know, twisting Bulletproof Car into Bulletproof Heart.
I love that.
Very cool. You know, we're talking about Eric, and I don't want to get maudlin, but I miss the guy. You know, we spend a lot of time together. I spend no time with him compared to you. Your life is rocking, you're touring, you're doing everything, but that guy's not on your side on stage anymore. Is it a little awkward? Are you past that? How you doing?
I got past it in the first 2 years. I did 2 years of touring on my own while he was still touring. I stayed out of our markets, played only secondary markets, and got all the awkwardness out of my system. The day he retired, which was basically June 6th, 2009, the next week I did a show at McCabe's, and I was ready to own it. I found my personality. I found my stage persona. I found the artistry. I miss my friend. I don't miss him musically because it doesn't leave a hole. And I play those songs every night. I remember him from the stage in markets where we did well, but places in the deep South and Southeast where we never figured, I might mention him once, I might not. Places like Chicago, I mention him a lot. It's simply the reality that's, I'm not going to, I don't want to talk about Artie Garfunkel. I'm not going to do that. Or I don't want to speak about Beatles. Lone and Navarro was my life, but it ended its own end. We didn't fall apart. We didn't divorce. He moved on. He passed away and I had to keep going. So I miss my friend. I don't miss him musically because I play the music, which keeps me in that feeling. And it's a great feeling. I purposely have avoided having harmony vocals in my shows to not do the comparison because, man, once you've been with the best, what's the point? Mm-hmm. And occasionally there are harmonies, but I don't really go there. And if it's there, it's fun, but it's not like I need a harmony singer or I need a partner. Yeah. I learned how to own it on my own.
But you weren't sure. I remember as things were winding down, I remember you saying, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I'm not sure how I'm going to do this.
I wasn't sure if I was going to like it. My first couple of tours driving by myself was really weird. And I'm kind of going, this is strange. But I did like it. And I do like it. Eric and I did 1,500 shows together over a roughly 20-year period. I'm pushing 1,500 in 12 years because I'm working more. Partly, I'm playing smaller audiences. I don't have to carry around the players and all the stuff. So I'm able to be more nimble. And things have picked up. But I don't draw what Lone and Navarro did, and I never will. I'm cool with that. We had that, and I remember every minute of it. Every minute of it. But this is the new era. This is what it is now. If you spend your time saying, I don't want it anymore because it's not what it was, well, then what's the point? And if you spend your time saying, I don't even want to talk about that, this is now. No, I do both. I love my past and I love my present and I honor them both.
Now, I don't know if you know this, but you are of Mexican descent.
I am.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, somebody told me the other day.
Does the Latin side of your world get into your music? Because it's not obvious. It's not out front. But it's there somewhere.
It came out during pandemic when I needed to start figuring out how to make the shows different from night to night because I was doing them so often. And so I did a whole evening of Spanish and the audience is going like, whoa, more please. And so I would do Spanish songs and it had never been a part of what I do. I have a couple songs I do in the set now. And eventually, especially considering that I'm on a roll now to start recording more and more quickly, I'm going to do an all Spanish record at some point.
Oh, cool. Cool. Now We Belong, when you do it live, and there's actually a recorded version with a Spanish section in there.
Yep. That's
very cool.
Well, we did as a joke. It just turned out nobody thought it was funny and they won't let us stop. So it became the regular way we do that. And now the Spanish part of me was always an ancillary. I've done a lot of my session work. I started doing session work in jingles in Spanish in 1988 at 36. And it caught on and I get my health insurance from the Screen Actors Guild and I'm on the board of SAG-AFTRA. And so I'm involved in that world. But initially it was all in Spanish. Now it's mostly in English, but it became a part. It basically that side of me emerged as relevant. And so I was forced to either not deny it, but sidestep it or just go, man, own it. And the audience, especially the Dan fam, loves the Spanish stuff. So I'm going to keep doing it.
Cool. And a whole album would be fantastic.
It would be. It's a lot of fun songs out there.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the other side, another side of your life. You've been to Washington several times on behalf of Songwriter. Mm-hmm. You were the president of Folk Alliance International. You mentioned SAG-AFTRA. You've been on that board for quite a while. There's a side to you that, I don't know, how do we describe it? A political side or advocacy side? Or
there's an advocacy side. It's political from the standpoint that sometimes one side of the aisle is more prone to give artists what they want. As things have progressed with electronic media, disdain for copyright has become huge, and I make my living from copyright. The notion is we want to be able to monetize this, but we don't want to pay you. And it's like, yeah, no, that's not cool. In 1995, I got asked to go to Washington on behalf of some songwriters for what became the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And I got the bug, and I started learning about the details involved. And so I started showing up for things from 99 to 07. I was on the board of governors of the Recording Academy out of LA. 06 to 17, I was on the board of Folk Alliance. I was on the board of AFTRA, the union, from 01 to merger in 2012. I've been on the merge board since 2012, 9 years now. I'm on the Mechanical Licensing Collective's Unclaimed Royalties Committee, and that's the entity that came up out of the Music Modernization Act that's going to monitor how songwriters and publishers are paid on streams. I like knowing how the sausage is made, and I've managed to pull a few threads together to basically say, you can pay us or not pay us, but don't deny me my right. Don't tell me my right is of no use because it's pennies. They're my pennies. I want them.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask a real quick question, Mike?
Sure.
I'm sorry to jump in and interrupt. I'm very interested in what you were just talking about, Dan. Where is the best place for listeners to listen to music and pay the artist, since you sound like you really know
The answer to your specific question is something like Patreon, where you support an artist directly.
Okay.
Streaming services pay very, very little.
Right.
They're micro cents. Now, part of it, when I get a radio play on a song, that's anywhere from 10,000 to 100,000 people. A stream on Spotify is one set of ears. And the record companies have also done other kinds of deals. There's a lot of money changing hands, but it doesn't necessarily flow. The streaming services have effectively killed CD sales, even killed downloads, yeah, where the profit streams were better for the artists and the labels. So the best place, if you really want to support a particular artist, is support them directly through something like Patreon. There are systems through Twitch and Facebook that you can monetize. Go to a show.
Yeah.
You know, buy merchandise.
Yeah.
It's a silly way to do it. It used to be that I would create something, all of us would create a piece of work that would earn while we did other things. Now it's a day's work for a day's pay. But,
We want to support, and I know the listeners of the show do as well, we want to support the musician and the artist and give as much as we can to you. Okay, back to you,
Thank
Mike.
Thank you.
All right, we're sliding into a break here. Kat, what are you going to work on? A special song, by the way.
Yeah, Dan has us going out to Walking on a Wire. Tell us a little bit about that one before we go to break.
Written with Rick Boston and Eric Lowen. Eric, there was a squirrel crawling on a telephone wire. Rick Boston said, what about Walking on a Wire? Eric said, yeah, Walking on a Wire, higher and higher. And I laughed. I just went, yeah, you told the truth, but you're still a liar.
I love that line.
Laughed our heads off, and then, wait a minute, there's something there. Eric created a political story. I like the idea of confusing the political issue for the romantic issue, essentially of communication between people that have broken down completely. Song came out really, really quickly, and it was the first single that Lone and Navarro put out. And because of that, you told the truth, but you're still a liar. It still has resonance.
And you can't get away without singing it to this day, right?
To this day. Oh, you know, people go, I don't want to sing that song anymore. Yeah, get over yourself, dudes. Go out there, sing the song a million times. You're lucky if people want to hear you do something.
I love that. On that, we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jeremiah Show. Hey, everyone. If you like the music from today's show, here is where you can get some more. Follow Dan Navarro at dannavarromusic.com. Follow Dan Navarro on Facebook at Dan Navarro Music. on Instagram at Dan Navarro, and go to his website, dannavarro.com.
This is the Daniel Emmett Show. I've stolen this moment from our host, Jeremiah. He's asked me to give you the title of the song, Che vuole questa musica stasera? And that is a song that I fell in love with when I heard it for the first time, used in the soundtrack of the movie The Man from U.N.C.L.E. back, I believe it was in the mid-2010s, and just had to record it, and it is going to be a part of my upcoming album releasing later this year.
Your breath, don't waste my time. If I hear one more excuse, I'll lose my mind. Walking on a wire, higher and higher. You told the truth, but you're still a liar. Walking on a wire, walking on a wire.
I'm Zeke Cam.
And I'm Taylor Morton, and we made the movie The Last Blockbuster that you can get from Blockbuster Video on DVD Blu-ray combo at benblockbuster.com.
The Jeremiah Show, the only place to hear the Mike Gormley host interview series, bringing you iconic music business managers, musicians, and the players who have created your favorite music from 1960 to the 2000s. Find all of Mike's past interviews in the Jeremiah Show music catalog on thejeremiahshow.com or your favorite podcast sites.
I sit too long, the television starts telling me it's my friend. But when the air goes still, it starts feeling like the end. And then the world calls out, a wind whispering, baby, I got something new. Well, it's a siren song that beckons me to move. You know I can't slow down, my wheels are turning. Don't matter if I'm wasting time. I'm gonna set my sights on the next horizon line.
Welcome back to the Jeremiah Show. Again, we're here with Dan Navarro, and hopefully you watch this on YouTube, because we just had a nice little section that you're not going to be able to hear here on the radio. So go to YouTube to watch this. So entertaining. You just heard Horizon Line. Dan, tell us about Horizon Line.
Horizon Line came, I wrote Horizon Line with a guy named Hank Linderman, who is Timothy B. Schmidt's engineer. He's also engineered for America and Firefall, and was working with Chuck Plotkin. I met him through the producer who did Bruce Springsteen. I met Hank through Steve Postel, and we just hit it off. We wrote this song one day. Hank is an amazing guy who actually ran for Congress in the 2nd District in Kentucky twice as a Democrat, which means he got his butt kicked. But the essence of the song was, I want to know what's next. You know, you can be conscious of the ground under your feet, but I've got my sights set on the horizon, and I'm going to rush toward the horizon line. The simple fact is you never get there, but you keep going. So the whole notion of it is, why do I do this after all these years of touring and writing? And, you know, it's not just for the money. It's, you know, the money's nice, and sometimes it doesn't pay that well. What it really is I love the job. I love the task. You know, I can't slow down. My wheels are turning. Don't matter if I'm wasting time. Gonna set my sights on the next horizon line. And that's the essence of the song.
I love that.
Great song. Beautiful song. Thank you, man. How old is that song?
About 2 years old. It's brand new. It's gonna be, it's the title track of the next album.
Oh, cool.
Because that's really what the next album is saying. Why are you doing this? Where are you going? I'm going that way. I don't know what's there, but I'll find out when I get there. And when I get, and with any luck, you never get there.
So basically, that's a demo we just heard. I mean, that's
a demo
going to be recorded. Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be recorded. That was probably just live me on the 12 string at home through a couple of microphones. And that'll be on the next album. I can't wait to know what Jim Scott's going to do with that.
That's the next step. Actually, it's funny you would say that, because I was going to ask about the studio process versus the live process. I mean, there's an obvious difference, but also it depends on who you go in with, into the right. studio with. And how do you prepare for that? You've known Jim for years.
One of the things is, first of all, I trust Jim completely with regard to Sonics. He trusts me with regard to the music. I have a number of players to choose from, and I'm going to probably do 4 days of tracking with 4 different rhythm sections. Probably Leland Sklar and Russ Kunkel for 1 day. Probably Steve Ferroni from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and Bob Glob, who plays with Jackson Browne. These are all friends of mine. By the way, 10 years ago, they weren't friends of mine. I've known Bob for a long time. But these are new friendships I've made, and I'm sitting there going, well, it's time to record with them. Hutch Hutchinson, who I've known for 30 years, will be on 1 day. I don't know who the drummer will be on that day, but the bottom line is I want to work with these friends. When you work with people you love who love you, you get the best performances, and just let the process dictate how it goes. Luckily, I've played these songs enough live that I know what I'm doing, and the versions change from day to day. Because what I like about the live thing is that it's, all right, here's how it goes today. The recording process, you have to sort of freeze it. So I want to work with people I trust so that whatever we freeze will feel that visceral.
And Hutch isn't just a bass player. Bonnie Raitt's musical director.
Bonnie Raitt's musical director for 30 years. One of the most magnificent bass players I've ever known.
And a sweet guy.
A sweet guy and a dear friend. Hutch has played on 3 or 4 of our albums. He did not end up getting on Shed My Skin, my solo record. Timing just didn't work out. And I know he was disappointed, and so was I, but I made it the way I had to make it. Partly also, I wanted upright bass on everything on that record. I'm ready to go back to electric bass. Leland's a relatively new friend, as is Russell. And if you think I'm going to miss the opportunity to cut with Leland Sklar and Russ Kunkel, you're mistaken. I'm not going to let that go by. But I'm lucky to be blessed with good friendships, and I want to work with all of them.
That's very cool. Now, we're talking about in the studio as an artist. What about as a writer? I know you don't produce, but if somebody's recording one of your songs, are you there? Do you want to be there? Do you have anything to do with it at all?
Almost never. Almost never do I have anything to do with it. And only occasionally have I loved what they've... Every song I've ever had recorded by another artist, I listen to going, oh, really, guys? I mean, I think the exception was when Jackson Browne did Weight of the World, and I had to pull the car over because I started weeping, because Jackson was an idol of mine. Now he's a casual friend. We're not close friends, but we're friends. We're friendly. And when I heard that, I just went, I can't believe this just happened. And I literally, it was, and you were involved in that record. You were one of the producers of that record, Mike. Yep. And I had to pull the car over because I was overcome with emotion. Hey, what better thing is there to feel in your life than to have that feeling? So that was a good one. It was a really great night. I think Janis D'Alessandro gave me the record at the Mint, and I drove home and had to pull over.
Yeah, Janis was one of the producers as well. It was a record. It was a tribute to Loana Navarro record, and some, you know, that's where Keb Mo came in, the Bangles came in, Jackson came in. The story behind Jackson is kind of funny in that Jackson's brother is on there on recording on his own as well, and Severin Browne. And Severin, I bumped into him and his then wife at McCabe's, and he said, how's the record going? This is months after it got started. And I said, everything's moving along except your freaking brother won't do his vocals. And his wife turned and said, we get him on the phone tomorrow. And within 2 days, Jackson was in the studio. That's the power of women.
My understanding is the first time, because I go back with Severin to the 70s. It's the first time Severin and Jackson had ever sung together was on that record, is my understanding.
Really? Yeah. Wow.
It was a real heartening feeling, incredibly. But most of the time, I'm not involved in the recording. I just as soon get the heck out of the way and let them do what they do. you know, it has not always been like that, but most of the time it's like that.
What song did the Temptations do?
They did a song called Kids in Motion for a children's record, and we were in the studio when they cut that. And I'm sitting there hanging out with Melvin Franklin, and as he goes, everybody loves those Kids in Motion. And I'm just dying going, and that ain't right. It's that guy who did that on Papa Was a Rolling Stone. You know, these are the moments you just sit there and go, I can't believe I'm here. You know, I mean, I love their songs and My Girl and, you know, Can't Get Next to You and Papa Was a Rolling Stone and all of those things, and going, man, I can't believe I'm here.
You can't believe you're there in general sometimes.
I still can't. From you. I'm the luckiest guy in the world. It's as simple as that. And if I ever come off of that, then I think it's dangerous. I think it's time to get the heck away from me. If I ever get to, yeah, hubris doesn't fit me. So I'm just perfectly happy to just be in awe and wonder and work hard. I have basic beliefs. The only answer is yes. Every day you spend doing this is better than some, you know, my worst day in music was better than my best day in advertising. And these things keep me going.
Advertising, that you've used advertising though. I mean, you've used and maybe in design.
I still use the design aspect. I design all my record covers. I've got a record coming out with James Lee Stanley, who has a series called All Wood and. He did All Wood and Stones.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That's great.
Well, we're doing All Wood and Lead, and it's acoustic and reinventions of Led Zeppelin songs. And I did the cover from a KOA campground in my van because it was overdue.
Yes. In fact, can I tell you, he called me that day and said, what am I going to do? I can't get Navarro to finish this song. And I don't know what I said. I said, just call him or something. And I think like 3 hours later, he texted me and said, it's done. So I don't know what his approach had been before that. But
it was the hard deadline. It was, I need it by this date or we're in trouble. And I grumbled the whole time, but I did the job. And it was my fault. I procrastinated. But we're done, and it's good, and the record's going to ship, I think, on July 10th.
I've heard some of it. It's Led Zeppelin, would you say folk style? That's not really
ish. Accurate.
Yeah.
It's either going to be highly praised or we're going to be skewered because that stuff is sacrosanct to some.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, I think you're going to hear a lot of praise. I've heard some of it. It's beautifully done. And I guess there are people who are just stuck in a song sounding a certain way.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, Steve Gillette said it in the song Berkeley Woman, I'd no more love just one kind of woman than I'd drink only one kind of wine, you know, which is a very dated and probably not necessarily a very generous frame of mind for today, but in the Me Too and Time's Up generation. And I agree with that, but you know, we chose to do them the way we wanted to do them. And some people will like it. And some people will go, you guys are fools. It is what it is.
We were talking about lyrics earlier, and you guys wrote way up there in the top three favorite line pieces of lyric that I've encountered. I tried to put my best face on, but the damn thing always fit me wrong.
I knew you were going there because you told us that at the time. That was a song that I wrote without Eric. And you said that at the time from Great. The song. Yeah. From the song Until the Well Runs Dry that came out in 95 when we were working together. Yeah. You know, it was a dark period and that's how I expressed it. But, you know, I remember you've always loved that line and thank you for that.
I love the song. The song is fantastic. And, you know, I know this is somewhat painful, but it's one of those should have been a hit. Song.
Well, a couple of those. Yeah. Oh, well, you know, it goes how it goes. It goes how it goes. I have no regrets. I've made some mistakes. I've made some big, gigantic mistakes. But at the end of the day, everything's been fine. I still get to do this. And that is how I look at it. I have a lot of friends who, you know, who have had less success than me. I've had a lot of friends who've had more success than I. And I have a few friends, not many, but a few friends who were bitter about what didn't happen. The bottom line, I get it, but it's not going to serve you. At the end of the day, be grateful for what you're doing. Do your best. Swing away. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And just go down swinging, man.
On that, we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jeremiah Show. Hey, everyone. If you like the music from today's show, here is where you can get some more. Follow Dan Navarro at dannavarromusic.com. Follow Dan Navarro on Facebook at Dan Navarro Music, on Instagram at Dan Navarro, and go to his website, dannavarro.com.
Hey, what's up? It's Carter Rubin. I was privileged enough to be crowned the winner of season 19 of The Voice. You can go listen to my music on Apple Music, iTunes, YouTube Music, and Spotify, and you're listening to The Jeremiah Show.
Yeah. Of darkness, hope and anger, the road to freedom paved with fear. Lead me back to where I came from, somewhere far away from here. But the light to find my way back home is growing dim. And the sirens from behind the walls draw me in. So I shed my skin.
Hi, you're listening to The Jeremiah Show. This is Zay Romeo. I am a contestant on season 20 of The Voice, and you can catch me on all my socials at Zay Romeo.
Check out The Jeremiah Show Facebook and YouTube pages for exclusive videos of our Jeremiah Show guest interviews.
I hope a guiding light can find me so I can put this darkness behind me. Everybody's sleeping but me. I'm staring at the ceiling. It's a quarter to three. My brain is stuck in chatter and nothing seems to matter.
Welcome back to The Jeremiah Show. Again, we're here with Dan Navarro, and hopefully you watch this on YouTube, because we just had a nice little section that you're not going to be able to hear here on the radio. So go to YouTube to watch this.
I want to jump back from music to the voiceover business. I'm just wondering, are there voices people would recognize that were you if you did them now?
Unlikely. 400 episodes of Family Guy, American Dad, and The Cleveland Show, but unidentifiable noise voices. Wow. The ones that people recognize, I did a couple of parts in the video game Fallout 4, and I played Jacob Orden, this corrupt mayor, saying things like, I think he's been out in the sun too long. You know, I'm not, that is above my pay grade. I'm not going to do that. And people go, oh my God, dude, I killed you. It's Cilantro in American Dad singing, el perro, es mi corazón, where I utter the lines, Cilantro te la besos mejor que su esposo. Cilantro can kiss you better than your husband. And saying these silly things, and people, that's gotten a bigger rise out of people than We Belong. But mostly it's just been the ability to do certain voiceovers and certain characters. Again, the Javier Bardem cops, nobody's supposed to know about that. It's meant to sound like it's Bardem. But that was, you know, 8 sessions over at Disney. I'm lucky to get to do this. And my thing is just, you know, do you think maybe you could? I go, yeah. Well, you don't even know what I'm going to say. It doesn't matter. I can do that. And if I don't know, I learn by morning.
All right, cool. Look, Kat, I'm wondering if you have some questions, because you're sitting there quietly, and you know, you do the intro and the outro, but you're a very smart lady. I'm just wondering if you've thought of anything along the way.
You are so sweet. Thank you. I think we need to take a break. Dr. Dizzy, we need to take a quick break, because you were...
I would say let's just keep rolling, keep the momentum moving, and we'll wrap it up at the end, okay?
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Okay. I think the My biggest question of you is, like, have you always been just this? I'm listening to you talk and you're just like an engine just going and going and going. Have you always been that way? Or has there been anything that kind of really showed you, like, hey, I better, because I love the way that you're living. I love the way the themes, like, there's so many things you've said that I've like actually written down. I'm like, stitch that on a pillow. I love the way that your mantras and how you're living your life. And I guess my thing is, like, what kind of coffee do you drink? And have you always been this way?
No.
So, okay.
I wasted a lot of time. There was in the 70s when I was in my 20s, I'd have a little success and then I would sit back and coast. Mm-hmm. And I didn't double down on the energy. When it looked like the period from 1978 to 1984, where nothing was happening and it wasn't working and I was struggling and it wasn't, and I looked like I was on the way to a career. And then We Belong happened. I realized, my God, you've been thrown a lifeline here in your 30s to get to do this. When we were not succeeding as artists and we decided to just go do it for love. And then it happened. That's when the light bulb went on, that if you just do the work, as Mike Gormley says, activity breeds activity. But I was lazy. I was terrified. I couldn't follow through. And it finally occurred to me, you're going to be everything that you are scared of becoming if you don't get off your butt. And I felt like I was behind. So I started pushing and pushing and pushing. Then things would happen. But whether it was becoming an artist or later becoming, I became a voice guy by taking a jingle session for $100 in a friend's garage. And I met someone who then funneled me into Spanish language jingles. And all of a sudden, I'm a first call. Time and time again, the notion has been presented to me in my face. If you just do it, and quit making excuses, quit sitting there and going, I can't, banish the word can't, mm-hmm. banish the connection to outcome. And things started working. So this energy level, Mike probably remembers this energy level from when we worked together. But when Mike and I worked together, I had been at it for 15 years. And 10 of those years were not very good. The 5 years, 8 years before that were better. So this has progressed over time. When it looked like I was never going to be an artist again because my partner was dying, was another time. So now it's in spades. But I haven't always been like this.
Yeah. And I would imagine the something as just earth shaking as the pandemic, you were already then fairly primed for that. You seem like someone that can really make a pivot pretty quickly, because this is the jam you've been on.
One day I said, I'm just going to go out and do one song live. And at the end of it, I said, well, I guess I'll see you tomorrow. And at the end of that day, I said, I guess I'll see you tomorrow. It was 14 days straight. Then I started taking a single day off. It was 6 days a week. Yeah. And I'm sitting there going, every marketing rule I've ever heard is you're oversaturating, but the result wasn't present. And so I was learning from what was happening compared to my prior experience. And I realized it's not about the music. It's not about me. It's about the engagement and people were coming to be engaged. The connection.
Yeah.
We're starved for connection and pandemic starved us more.
Yeah. Well, you are an inspiration. It's such an honor to talk to you.
Thanks, Kat. We're winding down for the day here. Hate to see Dan Navarro leave, but we have just so much time. Dan, it's been fantastic to see you and talk to you, because we just don't get to talk very often.
We don't, but you know, we've been friends for a long time and it's always great to catch up with you, Mike.
Yeah. And, Kat, we have a song going out, I do believe, and we need to find out about it, cause it's a new one, I think. Isn't it?
Yeah. I it's called Come Around. And then in parentheses, it says January's Child. And I think that this isn't, I don't think we can hear this anywhere quite yet. Is that true?
It's going to be on the next record. The short version of it is I wrote this song when I was 21. I played it in a show at the end of February last year, just for the fun of it. And the audience went, we love that. And so it ended up back in the set. I can hear the 21-year-old, but it's a 40, it's a 47-year-old song about to see the light of day for the first time.
Fantastic.
I love that.
Well, welcome, song.
Yeah.
Welcome to the world.
Aw.
And thank you, Dan, and thank you, Kat, and thank you, Dr. D, and thank you very much, Jeremiah, because it's your show. And you didn't say five words.
is my mic on here? Hey, I just said five words. Is my mic on? Well, how many words is that? I'm working my way into this whole radio thing. Dan, so such an honor to have you on. That's all I want
to
say.
It's an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to see you, to meet you all who I haven't met. And Mike, it's always great to see you.
Great to see you. Safe travels. You're doing a lot of it, so do it safely.
You got it.
Communicate. Right. And listen, Kat, more, and evolve. And Kat?
Kat, give him a hug for me when you see him in Austin.
I'm going to give him a big hug. You got it.
I'm double vaxxed, by the way, just so you know. Both COVID and rabies.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, I got the rabies first.
All right. Have a great week, everybody. Thanks, Mike. Great interview. Okay. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you very much.
January's child is weeping, swears that she will never find her way. February's child is sleeping, 'cause it's much too hard to face another day. Come around like the seasons, come around with the never be the same for all that's coming through my tears. But if you should come around, well, I'll be here. March's child is lost in a daydream, doesn't want to think of where she's been. April sets the young one on to traveling, seems as good a time as any to begin again. Come around like the seasons, come around with the years. I'll never be the same for all that's coming through my tears. But if you should come around, well, I'll be here.
You've been listening to The Jeremiah Show. I am Miles Zuniga from Fastball, and you can find me every Tuesday at 7 p.m. at www.facebook.com/MilesZunigaLovesYou. I do a live stream. I'd love to see you there. Thank you.
Hi, this is comedian Maj Chobrani, and you are listening to The Jeremiah Show on AM 1290 KZSB Santa Barbara. Listen, man.
Do you need help with your restaurant or hospitality business? See how we can help your business at hjlrestaurantadvisors.com. Check out our website at thejeremiahshow.com. We are on SoundCloud. Please subscribe on iTunes, podcast The Jeremiah Show. Did you like our soundtrack? Find all of our soundtracks on Spotify, The Jeremiah Show. As always, a big thanks to Dr. D for making our voices come alive on the airwaves, and to our station manager, Les Carroll, for letting us on the airwaves at all. Be sure to check out our very own Richard Dr. D. Dugan's Peabody Award-nominated radio show, Tell Me Your Story, every Sunday at 7 a.m. and again at 7 p.m. Thank you for listening to The Jeremiah Show with Kat and Dr. D. Listeners, we appreciate you and want to hear from you. Please send us your ideas at thejeremiahshow.com. Follow us on Instagram at The Real Jeremiah Show. The Jeremiah Show is produced by executive producer Jeremiah Higgins and sound engineer Richard Dr. D. Dugan. Have a great rest of your week, everyone.
Communicate. Listen more. Evolve.
They were beautiful. The most beautiful sky has a fire. The clouds were so.